Minnesota Senate Labor Committee is called to order. First up on our agenda today is Senate File 3793, which is Senator Housechild's bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Labor Committee members. I am here to introduce Senate File 3793, Policy and Technical Changes to Construction Codes and Licenses. Policy and Technical Changes to Construction Codes and Licensing Provisions. I will have the commissioner come up, Johnny Villarreal, the Bureau of Mediation Services.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome, Commissioner. To the bill.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill is strictly a technical update to make the language more readable and more citable. It identifies things in alpha and numeric format so that we have a lot of stakeholders who, whether it be a business agent for a union, an employee, or an HR director, a city or a county administrator who are not attorneys, this just goes with plain language best practices.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Housechild, are there any other testifiers in support of the bill, or does that conclude the presentation?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. No, there are no other testifiers unless there are some that I am unaware of.
Thank you, Senator Housechild. Members, does anyone have any questions about Senate File 3793 or any discussion that you'd wish to have before we look to move the bill? And the path of this bill is then to be referred to State and Local Government and Veterans Committee after this. Some people may be getting the first look. All right. Not seeing any desire to ask any questions or have further discussion on this Senate file. Members, would someone like to move that Senate File 3793 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the State and Local Government and Veterans Committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you very much, Senator. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say nay. The motion passes.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Okay. How are you doing today?
Okay, we will move to Senate File 3428, Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3427 is likewise to some technical and policy changes to certain public employee labor relations provisions. And here with us, continuing on to this Senate file, is our Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services, Johnny Villarreal, to tell us a little bit more about some of the details.
Commissioner, Chair, committee members, this is the exact same thing as the previous bill. Again, just updating the language to make it more readable and more citable.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, yep. I neglected to say right when I began speaking that I do have an A1 amendment for Senate File 3428. It is quite simple. It goes to page 2, lines 37 and 27 to delete the word employee. There you go. It's supposed to read just organization instead of employee organization, and that was an oversight, but that's to correct that.
Yep, that's. So the author has introduced the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Okay, seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, Senator Pappas?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I just really wanted the Senate Counsel to repeat the amendment to make sure we have it in the record since we don't have it written in front of us.
Sure.
Okay, you have it? Sorry. Never mind.
All right. Okay, so no further discussions. Those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. All right, the A1 amendment passes. Any discussion on the underlying bill? Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, we're moving so fast. I forgot to mention that I just really appreciate the commissioner cleaning up these statutes, and I think this is always really important work that sometimes we neglect to do, is these technical bills, and I think it's part of making it easier for the public and stakeholders and state employees to understand the laws we pass when we provide it in clearer language. So thank you very much, Commissioner.
Wonderful. Senator Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair. Yeah, I guess this question would be for the commissioner. The question I have is on page 9917. It has to do with rulemaking. Are we removing rulemaking from the agency, come back next year with the recommended changes?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we are not removing rulemaking as far as that goes. It's an expedited rulemaking process that's written in here. Because the bill is so just technical in nature, did not feel like we needed to move with a hearing in this instance.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for your response. You know, I don't have a real good attitude towards rulemaking, to tell you the truth. I was pretty good friends with an administrative judge. They're involved with rulemaking, aren't they, correct?
Commissioner, Chair, Senator, they are, and they would be in this instance as well. Expedited rulemaking still will have this go to the Office of Administrative Hearings and would still have a comment period, et cetera. It just would not have the hearing.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I guess I would just suggest, well, the good friend I had who was an administrative judge for a couple of years, he's not anymore, he just saw a lot of abuse by the agencies in terms of expanding the legislation or making up things to insert. So to what degree we can address that in terms of the rulemaking and you as commissioner, that this isn't abused in the process. I guess that would be my suggestion, because I think major changes should not happen through rulemaking. They should happen through the legislative process where, you know, the transparency to the public is made available. So those are just my thoughts.
Any thoughts, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the specific rulemaking in this language is strictly narrowed to the majority verification process. So it's strictly just clarifying that piece.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, will someone move Senate File 3428 as amended be recommended and passed and re-referred to the State and Local Government and Veterans Committee? Yes, Senator
Mr. Pappas. Chairman, just a procedural rule. Since,
yes.
Since yourself and Senator McEwen are on the committee, they can certainly move their own bill.
Okay. Chair McEwen, would you like to move your bill as amended?
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Housechild. I would like to move then that Senate File 3428 as amended is recommended to pass and is re-referred to the State and Local Government and Veterans Committee. Thank you.
Okay, on Senator McEwen's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Okay, the motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Next up on our agenda for this afternoon, we have Senate File 3638, which is a bill that Senator Marty brings before the committee. Senator Marty, welcome, and to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 3638 is a simple bill for in the employment process where a job seeker is offered a job and then they are given a drug test. Right now, it's a lab test that can take a couple weeks to get the person to get to and so on. And employers are saying a lot of times, applicants who may not have transportation and so on, it's hard for them to get the test, so they don't follow through with it. And they just look for a different job. And it's hard for the employer and the employee that they have to wait a couple weeks. And we now have I think Senator Pappas may have carried, did you carry that bill on drug testing way back when? That now that the new testing and everything else, there's an oral fluid testing procedure that can be done at the employer's place right away and can get the person started working right away. So I think this is something that both the employers and the employees feel is a good alternative. And in the bill, Section 5, the substantive part of the bill, it simply allows them to do the oral fluid testing. And then if the test is a positive test result or inconclusive or invalid, you can do the regular lab test, which means the 2 weeks, but that happens very seldom. And so in most cases, the person would be able to work right away. And I brought with me a constituent, Todd Ehner, who works in HR and has come across this and came up with the idea, why does Minnesota not do this since most other states do allow the oral tests?
And thank you, Senator Marty. And Senator Marty, do I understand that you also may have an A1 amendment? Would you like to do that?
A1 amendment, which just strikes line 13 on page 1, because the Commissioner of Labor and Industry didn't really care to get into making sure all these tests or whatever, they have to meet the other criteria, and so they suggested this amendment, and I'd like to move that.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Any questions about the amendment? Okay, not seeing any. Senator Marty has moved that we adopt the A1 amendment onto Senate File 3638. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. And thank you for the introduction, Senator Marty. Mr. Gaynor, yeah. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here. Thank you. I first approached Representative Moeller, whom I reside in her district, with this opportunity as a hiring manager for Veyer Supply Chain, which is a part of Office Depot. I'm the general manager of the distribution center. And this has just been a friction point in the hiring process, just slowing down the hiring process where today, as you know, we're a nationwide organization and we have distribution centers around the country, and many of our locations are able to utilize the rapid oral fluid tests that we are not able to currently here in Minnesota. So I asked Representative Moeller why, and then she came to her contact at the DLI, and we got the response back that it was procedural to be able to have a confirmatory test as a part of the process. And so the rapid oral tests don't allow for that, but that's why we wanted to leave in place the protections that currently exist in the current statute to say if you have a scenario in which the person does not pass, either it's illegible or it's potentially positive, then you would resume the current process. But our experience in our organization is that is a very rare occurrence. And so most 99%+ of the folks are going to enjoy the benefits of being able to do it on site at the point that you've extended the job offer and take care of that requirement along the hiring process immediately. So we feel like it's a benefit to both the applicant that they don't have to spend their time in potentially transportation arrangements to get to a clinic and begin that process where we can pretty much just take care of it immediately.
Thank you, Mr. Gaynor, for your testimony. I believe we also have John Beshe, who is here to testify. Hi. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you would please introduce yourself for the record, and we look forward to hearing your testimony.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Beshe. I'm here on behalf of Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. Thanks for the opportunity to provide some brief comments on Senate File 3638. I'll be really brief because we echo a lot of the comments of the previous testifier. We think that this bill is a really good first step towards providing employers and job applicants with additional flexibility as it relates to pre-employment drug, alcohol, and cannabis testing. Adding this option will provide employers with the opportunity to help streamline the hiring process, and we really do think it'll be beneficial to employees and job applicants by eliminating any of those delays that might result from applicants needing to obtain tests on their own time, and hopefully ultimately it gets people to work sooner. So one other comment is, you know, down the road, lawmakers might want to consider expanding the use of this test to be permitted for employees as well. But again, I think this is a really good first step, and we appreciate Senator Marty bringing the bill forward. So we request that you support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Before I ask for any discussion, Senator Marty, do you have any final thoughts?
Madam Chair, I think this is just a simple thing that both the employers and the employees would benefit from, and helps people when they're trying to get to work right away, and when they're trying to hire employees right away, avoids a couple week gap for a lot of them.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Members, discussion. Yes, Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Marty. This is a good bill. I like it. So just want a couple questions maybe to Mr. Gaynor on the accuracy of the test, if you would know, and then the results. How long does it take to get the results of the test?
Mr. Gaynor.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I have not encountered accuracy as a part of any of the research I've done, and I think that's because there is an FDA approval process. So in order for these products to be marketed, it has to go through an FDA 510K, I think it is, 510K or 510C, in order to be approved to market it out there. So those 510 FDA approvals are actually available for public visibility. So the company that we choose, Oraltox, is the one we're using nationwide. They have theirs out there, and so they had to go through samples and testing and quality requirements through the FDA in order to be approved to be marketed in this use. So I haven't seen it. We're a very cautious organization legally. We are err on the side of caution in almost all cases, and for our organization to be comfortable using it, I feel very confident in the reliability on it. Again, we haven't seen anything in our multiple years of use or around the country that would give us any cause for concern.
Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then the second question was just how long does it take to, you know, the results?
Mr. Gaynor.
It's 2 to 10 minutes. So it's basically like a lollipop, a lot of these are. So you're going to insert in your mouth and you're going to saturate into a certain point, and then it'll read once they have enough saturation. And so that process is 2 to 10 minutes, and then you just insert it into the particular device.
Senator Drink, all set? Okay. Any further discussion, members? Yes, Senator.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, that just raised a question. I like the bill also, by the way. But what if an employee refuses to take the test at all?
Perhaps Mr. Gaynor or Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Senator Grunhagen, yeah, if I'm applying for a job and they offer me the job, but I have to take the drug test first, and I don't take the test, I don't get the job.
Yeah, so within our organization, not all roles require drug testing. Mm-hmm. So we would, in our job posting, say that this job requires to pass a drug test. So I think actually that's probably the primary purpose for even doing drug testing these days, because we just don't see positive tests at all anymore. It's really meant to say if you are maybe somebody who's doing drugs, and you probably don't want to apply here because we will test. So I don't see that being a concern.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up. How does this test relate to marijuana usage? I mean, we hear a lot of there's a lot of concerns about having an accurate test on the use of marijuana. And of course, some of these employment positions can endanger other people, depending on what the scope practice is, I guess. So any thoughts on that?
Mr. Gaynor?
Yeah. With Minnesota legalizing THC, we no longer test for it in this state, at least in my organization. I would I believe that's probably the case for most companies, if not all, except in the case of like where DOT requirements require you to do it. So within my organization, I have drivers who are out delivering today, and they have to meet the DOT requirements. So therefore, this process would maybe look a little different for that role, because they're going to still get tested for marijuana, whereas you know, those that aren't required by a DOT will not get tested by that.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for that response. So can you use this oral test to test for THC then?
Mr. Gaynor?
Yeah, the testing does include THC in it. So there you can have, they call them panels. You can have as many panels as you'd like as an organization. So I think they go, most of the products I see go up to like 12 panels, and they'll test for 12 different substances. My organization just tests for 5 in states that where it's not legal for THC, and where it is legal for THC, we drop down to a 4-panel test. So you could, as an organization, select as many panels as you'd like, but given that it's legal here in Minnesota, we don't test for the THC.
Senator Grunhagen, do you have any follow-up? Okay. Any further discussion? Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Marty, I guess Mr. Gaynor possibly can answer this too. My question, I guess, would be, we kind of went down the line of, well, if the employee refuses the test, obviously they just don't get the job, but would the employee have the right to choose if they don't want to do the oral test and they were instead choosing to do the lab test? Could they choose that route instead with this or no?
I assume, Senator? They could here, but Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
No.
Madam Chair, I assume they could, but there wouldn't be much advantage to it, because we think this test is as accurate as the lab test, and you have to take the time, and it's covered by the employer, but you still have to take the time to drive out to the, set up the appointment, get the test, do that, and you can't start work for a couple weeks. So I don't know why anyone would, but I assume in theory you could say, yeah, I'd rather skip that. I mean, with the, with DWI and types of tests, when people do a breath test, people sometimes object to doing that and so on, but this is a different type of situation, because this is not a less accurate test as far as we know. We haven't seen anywhere in the documentation from other states or from federal government saying that it's any less accurate.
Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yeah, that I guess that answers the question for the most part. And then, you know, I know it's a lot of pilot programs going around for these oral tests. Are these readily available? I'm assuming they are, because you're using them at your other locations other than here in Minnesota. So that was, I guess, my only other question, but it kind of answered itself. So thank you.
Okay. Do you have any further response that you'd like to offer?
Yeah, no, I would say that the products seem very readily available. They're, you know, you can go online and there's many offerings there to choose from on that. And again, the more panels you do, the higher costs, the lower panels, lower costs. And so, I think the products, and again, I've seen just on one of the websites that are employer-based, given information to employees nationally that 38 states already use it. And of those, 27 have absolutely no restrictions, and 11 of them have some restrictions like we might have in our bill, which says, you know, for pre-employment only, or those kind of things. So it's pretty common at this point that it's out there, and it's it seems like to be a good product.
Thank you, Mr. Gaynor. Any further discussion or questions, members? Okay. Seeing none, any last comments, Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, your intent is to lay it over for inclusion in some...
That is correct. Yes, that is our intention.
Okay.
All right. Well, with that, Senate File 3638 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Labor Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Marty.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have one bill left on our agenda today, and... Vice Chair Housechild is going to chair for that.
Okay, to Senator McEwen for Senate File 3852.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3852 contains policy and technical changes to construction codes and licensing provisions. And here with me in support of the bill and to help answer questions about any of these changes that members may have is Director Todd Green, Director of the Construction Codes and Licensing with the Department of Labor and Industry.
Mr. Green.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Todd Green, and I'm the Director of CCLD at DLI. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 3852, the Construction Codes and Licensing Policy and Technical Bill. And with that, we'll go through it. Under Section 1, the bill fixes incorrect references on lines 2.21 and 2.24. In Section 2, the bill exempts internet continuing education for elevator constructors from the requirement that internet continuing education courses be approved by the International Distance Education Certification Center or the International Association for Continuing Education and Training before the course is submitted to the Commissioner for approval. This change would allow the commissioner to approve internet continuing education courses from other organizations so more continuing education can be made available to elevator constructors in Minnesota. Section 3 of the bill also fixes an incorrect reference. Section 4 of the bill deletes a reference to the alarm and communications licenses on line 6.8 through 6.11, as this license type no longer exists and the continued reference to it in statute has been confusing for some stakeholders. Similarly, lines 6.12 through 6.14 remove references to an outdated exemption. Section 5 of the bill removes an outdated reference to a specific chapter of the National Electrical Code on lines 7.19 and 7.20, and on lines 8.19 through 8.24, narrows the electrical license owner exemption to only allow an individual who owns and occupies or will own and occupy a residence upon completion to perform electrical work on that residence without a license if the residential dwelling has a separate electrical utility service not shared with any other dwelling. Section 6 and 7 of the bill update electrical statutes by removing outdated references to specific chapters of the National Electrical Code. The National Electrical Code is updated every 3 years, and part of the reason for these changes is to ensure the state statute does not reference specific chapters of the code and result in the statutes that contain incorrect references when future versions of the code are adopted. With that, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 3852, and I'll stand for any questions.
Okay. Senator McEwen, anything to add?
I just respectfully ask for your support of the bill, and we're here to answer any questions if people have them. Thank
you. Okay. Discussion, Senator Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, and Senator McEwen, bringing the bill forward. I do have a question on page 8, 819 through 824, mm-hmm. And that has to do with, first question would be, so if I have a twin home that shares electrical service, I can't, you know, I live on one side, another person lives on the other side, the way it sounds, I can't, and we have a shared electrical service, I can't do anything either in my, where I live or on the other side, or could you clarify that, please?
Yes, Senator, correct, that would be true. You. As long as there's a shared service, you would not be able to do your own work because your work could impact the owner on the other side sharing the same meter. It'd have to be separate service.
Senator Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. So let's say a light switch has to be changed. Would that fall under this category?
Mr. Green?
I mean, to sure, what degree sure. do we limit even changing a light bulb, I guess? You know, I mean, what if I want to go over and change a light bulb for a person? I guess, appreciate a response.
Mr. Green?
Chair, Senator, yes, technically a light switch would require someone with a license if you were in that situation where you could not perform your own work due to shared service. Light bulbs are not covered by any of that.
Okay.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for that. I think that language is a little tight, to tell you the truth. I mean, I've changed. I own a townhouse besides my residential home. And so if I change the light switch in my townhouse that I own, I'm going to go to jail? I hope not. Anyway, it just seems a little tight. You know, I don't want to call somebody and spend $200 to change a light switch. You know, I mean, it just, they're pretty simple. And again, any major changes electrically, I have to have an electrical inspector stop out and certify that it's correct to put a stamp on there. So is there any way to be a little bit more flexible on this language, or am I going down the wrong path, do you think?
Mr. Green.
Chair, Senator, this doesn't change what work has been allowed historically. This only is more or less a clarification to a homeowner have to have separate electrical service. The definition under statute of a homeowner or owner has been historically that you own or occupy or will own and occupy the residence. This simply makes it so that someone can't be performing work that may affect somebody on the other side of that wall in a twin home or anywhere where there'd be shared service.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for this. I just would encourage Senator McEwen to be a little bit more flexible on this. I'm not sure what the language should be. I don't have an amendment, but it just seems awful tight. You know, I don't know. I guess the second question I would have for the testifier, Ms. Chair, is there a, okay, what if somebody reports a person for doing this under this law? Is there a penalty for breaking this statute?
Mr. Green?
Yes, Chair and Senator, yes, there are enforcement penalties under statutes for unlicensed work. So again, if you were performing work on a residence that you were sharing service with, sure, there could be ultimately, but our staff are not out there looking for that. We're pretty busy to be looking for somebody that might be changing a light switch. But again, yes, there are penalties for unlicensed electrical work.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Grunhagen?
Well, I'm thankful you're not going to hire several hundred FTEs to enforce this provision, okay? So I guess I'm not real comfortable with this. And I guess I voice some of my concerns. Thank you for your testimony.
Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. So just a couple of questions. Background, give me a little history of the fix. I mean, I kind of have a hunch, but just a little background. And this has been going on for quite some time as far as people doing some of their own. Is there been some abuse? Is there some case that came up that just, house burnt down or something? Just this has been on the books for quite a long. So just kind of the history and then what's changed.
Mr. Green.
Chair, Senator, historically, this has been in place for many years. This is really, again, I'd say more of a clarification than anything. The electrical unit has wanted to make sure that those that are performing work on their own residence is for their residence alone and not for anybody else's. So historically, it's not like there's been many cases that have popped up over the years, but certainly it's a way to clarify who can do what work and when without a license.
Senator Dorner.
Mr. Chair, yeah, thank you. And I would agree. I think most of us that are in the trades know the lines that are drawn, and just wanted to see if there was something else I was missing. But no, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay. Senator McEwen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, I just wanted to say that I appreciate very much the discussion about this particular provision in these technical changes. I think everybody can understand that, of course, we don't want to interfere with you if in your home you want to, you know, do some of your own electrical work, and that is allowed under the law and has been allowed under the law, and this does not change that again. And to what Mr. Green said, I think the real concern is, and we can also understand this, if you are if you own a unit that is adjacent to or shares that space, you wouldn't necessarily want work to be done that would affect your safety. You know, if your neighbor says, oh, I got it, I know what I'm doing, I'm going to do this work myself, and you say, you know, I don't know, I actually would feel more comfortable if we had a licensed person doing that work, of course, right? So this provides for that sort of safety. So I also understand that, and I trust these professionals when they're saying that the definitions, we want to make sure that they're clear. So, yeah.
Okay. Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Jerry. Yeah, thanks for that response. And I understand that. It's just, I own, like I said, I own a townhouse besides my regular residence. It's just, you know, if you do any type of work, you should have an inspector come and test it to make sure it's right. I guess I'd just encourage you to put a little flexibility in there in terms of changing a light switch, you know, some of that stuff. It just, I don't know. The good news, we're not going to hire hundreds of FTEs to full-time employees to go out and check everybody. So I guess that I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? And Senator McEwen, any final thoughts?
No, just okay. Thank you very much for the discussion. And I believe the bill is said to be held over for possible inclusion. So thanks for the discussion, everyone.
Okay, with that, Senate File 3852 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. Appreciate it.